Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Auto Transport Intel. It is Wednesday. It is noon Central Time. That means it is time for DOT compliance with your DOT guy, Brian Riker. So he's going to join us here in a minute. Before we bring in Brian, I just want to mention, do me a favor. We got 30 minutes together, so you can click share, click copy, text, email, social media, let somebody know. Got a DOT question? This is the show. This is the time. And if you missed the show live, you can put it in the YouTube comments below. Also, please make sure you know that you can go to autotransportintel.com, click sign up. If you need help, if you want to talk to Ty, also go ahead and join the live chat. Ty is in the live chat. Ty says best DOT show on YouTube. Thanks, Ty. Appreciate that. Silver Mint's got a couple of questions as well, so we're going to get to Silver Mint's questions. This is the DOT show for you. It is every week, and it's constant questions. Meaning, you know, there's always something new to talk about. New rules, whether it's clearinghouse, hours of service, personal conveyance, whatever it is. I'm not the expert. Brian Riker, your DOT guy, he is the expert. And he's with us now, and he wants to help you. So, without further ado now, I've got Brian, you're joining us by phone. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Jay. Welcome. Thank you.
All right, cool. Welcome and thank you. I appreciate it. Let's see here. Oh, Lionel Yates is also in the live chat. We're going to get to, because I had a, go back to this screen. I got a couple emails just this morning, with some great comments and questions, and hopefully they can join us, in the live chat. I mean, it was short notice, but I do want to say this. I mentioned a couple things, so we'll just dive right in because it's a 30-minute show. And I know you're on the road. You're on the road right now. Is that right?
Yes, I am. I don't want to encourage any bad behavior, but yes, I can't be by video today because I'm traveling.
Okay, no problem. So just stay focused on the road. I'll handle everything else. And, Carlos Braxton says hello. What's up, Carlos? Thanks for tuning in. And again, if you have a question, you can just type it in the live chat. Or if you're on after the fact, put it in the YouTube comments. And let's dive right in with... Okay, Brian, here we go. The FMCSA announced members of a new commercial motor vehicle driver panel. First of all, what is that?
Well, what they have... Federal Motor Carrier for several years now has had the Motor Carrier Safety Advisory Committee. It's made up mostly of industry members, so trade associations like American Trucking Association, Truckload Carrier, Owner Operator Independent Driver Association, and executives from trucking companies. They started this year. They took nominations in October for a driver subcommittee to the Safety Advisory Committee that is a panel that is supposed to be made up of 25 active commercial drivers from various segments of the trucking industry. And so they announced last week who were the 25 that were selected out of the several hundred nominees they had for that committee. And they've selected several that are actual real driving a truck every day truck drivers. And then they selected Todd Spencer, president and CEO of the Owner Operator Independent Drivers Association, as chairman of that committee. And no disrespect to Mr. Spencer, but he is not an active truck driver. Merely having a CDL does not truck driver make you. He has not driven a truck professionally, regularly in nearly 40 years that he's been with the association. I think that the FMCSA dropped the ball on this one, and they have a couple of drivers on the panel that actually are behind the wheel every single day, but they have quite a few that are driver in spirit only because they maintain a CDL, but they do not actually drive a truck day in, day out like the intent of the committee was.
You know, it's interesting. Let me check my audio here. Mic check is... Hang on 1 second. Bear with me. Mic check. 1, 2, 2, 2, 2. Okay. Now I'm too loud. Of course. So the thing is, okay, this is really interesting. Brian. So that was a subcommittee that they created,
yes.
Right?
Correct. So, subcommittee of the Motor Carrier Safety Advisory Committee.
And so I'm gonna try and play both sides to be equitable and fair. But if it's a subcommittee of another committee, then there was no need to dip outside of active drivers, right? Wasn't that the whole point?
Correct. And especially, and again, no disrespect to Mr. Spencer, their organization does a lot of good for independent owner operators. I have my own personal differences of opinion with them regarding the towing industry and their attack on that. But this is not a towing industry show. But Mr. Spencer sits on the Motor Carrier Safety Advisory Committee already, and his term on that was renewed this year as well. So I think it's a disservice to the industry to have the same person representing the same views on both the committee and the subcommittee. That seat could have gone to a vocational industry. It could have gone to another independent owner operator company. It didn't have to go to a trade association is what I'm saying.
I'm seeing your point. I didn't know this until we were talking just now. And while I do appreciate OIDA, I really do, and I have friends there, but on this issue, I'm absolutely seeing your point, and I know that there's been a lot of frustration for a lack of representation, right?
Yes, and, there
and,
has.
And here we have another political example of, I mean, I gotta say, there's no need for him to be on both the committee and the subcommittee. That
correct.
Number one, he's not an active driver. So
yes,
wow,
he absolutely deserves a seat on the Motor Carrier Safety Advisory Committee, the overarching committee. Without a doubt, their organization and owner operators must be properly represented. Owner operators make up approximately 80% of the motor carrier industry, regardless of what subsector we're in, whether we're talking general freight, auto transport, heavy hauling, whatever. Owner operators make up the lion's share of the industry, and so they definitely need a voice. And I believe that that proper voice was on the overarching Motor Carrier Safety Advisory Committee. And perhaps maybe one of their board members, who are actual active truck drivers that still drive every day,
right,
would have been a better choice for chairman of the committee. Now, that I am impressed that the voice of small business trucking is the chairman of the committee. I don't want to take and make light of that decision by FMCSA when they formed this new committee, and it's a new committee, so it's going to have some growing pains. So I am impressed that small business trucking, not the mega fleet, has the head of the table. That's impressive and not to be put into a bad light.
Right.
I just think it should have been somebody that actually spends several days a week behind the wheel of a truck currently. I mean, again, he is aware of the issues that drivers face. They have 144,000 truck driver members, so I'm sure that he has his finger on the pulse. But
sure,
it's still different than somebody like myself that spends 3 days
driver
a week on the road.
Yeah.
Correct.
You wouldn't put me on the driver panel, would you?
No.
I'm not a driver. In fact, here are the other 24 members drivers?
From what I can see, most of them are, yes.
Yeah. So they got pretty close, but it's notable. And I mean, and you know, it's even, I know this is, you know, this is a boring topic. Shoot, it's a lot of the topics on this show get kind of boring, but but yet it's rather important because this was a moment to get it right, and it's close, I guess. Yeah, I mean, he could have said, you know, hey, I appreciate the nod, but we got some drivers here at OIDA. Let's give it to one of those guys.
Yes, and again, I applaud FMCSA for their efforts, and I think that this was kind of rushed trying to get it in before the administration changes, and who knows, with a new administrator at FMCSA, they might have a new direction. So right now we have a committee for the next 2 years that is driver focused. I'm pleased by that overall.
Right, which is then, and there we go. There's the silver lining. Hopefully, this is all a step in the right direction, because we do know that, you know, like Elaine Chao. When I heard, when I saw Elaine Chao speaking at the Mid-America Truck Show talking about tax dollars for Kentucky, I thought we were talking about trucking.
Yeah.
It was so weird. All right. So, let's go to the next one. I just want to say thank you for, you know, we had that YouTube comment question from a solo landscaper owner operator, and you gave a response there. In fact, rather than going into that, I'll tell you what, we got a couple in the live chat that I think I ought to get to. Silver Mint says, okay, if a pickup truck is registered as a commercial straight truck, does it need to adhere to a truck speed limit?
It's going to depend upon the state you're in when they have split speed limits for trucks. Some are based on the gross vehicle weight. Some are just based on it being a truck, period. For example, Indiana has a 65 mile an hour speed limit for all trucks greater than 26,000 pounds registered or gross weight. So in that case, if you're over 26, you would need to obey their 65 mile an hour speed limit. In California, who's notorious for their 55 mile an hour speed limit, generally a pickup truck, even commercial use, would not be under the truck speed limit. So it's going to vary from state to state.
He also asked, can I run not for hire retrieving a broken truck?
Do you own the broken truck? If you own the property, then you are a not-for-hire carrier. And let's clear up the not-for-hire misconception. All not-for-hire does is take away the requirement to have an operating authority. It does not relieve you of your liability to comply with hours of service or pull in the way stations or have a properly qualified, medically certified driver or anything else. Not for hire is not a magic bullet. Not for hire means you own the commodity that is being transported, so you're not doing it for compensation. You're not being paid by somebody to move that product. Think of it as the Piggly Wiggly bringing their own groceries to their grocery store. That is a not for hire, but all other aspects of transportation law apply to them.
Man, great. Great specificity there. I appreciate that. Here's one from Andrew. What is this mask mandate that Sleepy Joe is putting into place for interstate travel? Does this mean that I have to wear a mask while driving in my 5500 by myself?
No. What it means is he is invoking the Interstate Commerce Clause to protect the public. And I'm not going to get into whether that's right or wrong, but what it means is he is federalizing the mask mandate so that they are standard among all of the states, and that you will have to wear a mask when you cannot socially distance greater than 6 foot. So no, you're not going to be wearing a mask while you're driving by yourself in your truck. And even if it was a mandate, I'm sorry, there are some rules I just will not comply with.
And so let's talk about mask mandate for a second. So, you know, because to go through executive orders, et cetera, up until now, have we not had a mask mandate in public? Is it not a law, or is, you know,
it's not.
Yeah.
It's not a law.
Right.
It had been left up to the individual state to handle how they were going to handle social distancing and mask usage or requirements in their state, as it should be. It's a state issue.
Right,
and
okay.
So it was left up, like my home state of Pennsylvania, we have very tough mask mandates. They don't have the force of law, and that's where everyone gets confused. And again, I am not an attorney, but in my home state of Pennsylvania, they are a health department order. But they really don't have the force of law. However, under an emergency declaration, our state police have the authority to enforce an order from another department of the state. So they were enforcing it. Really, that's all it was different departments of health, whether on the state, county, or even local level, created their own COVID response plan because there was no unified federal plan. The attempt here is to unify our response to, it makes it easier for interstate commerce, just like all the other exceptions we have when we're in interstate trucking that local rules don't always apply. But it's an effort by the federal government to say, hey, what we're doing with the local response and local controlled response, we don't believe is working. Let's try it nationally, because there are some people that believe that some states are being too permissive and allowing us to just go about our lives. Hey, freedom. And there are some states that are way too restrictive. Let's kind of meet in the middle here. Again, I'm not supporting it one way or the other, but that is the intent of it.
It's very interesting. In fact, last Friday, we were having a, on Cars on the Move, Ty and I had Christopher Ludwig from Automotive Logistics, and he was talking about Brexit, and basically how, you know, before Brexit, when the EU was its community, right, and then you could just, if you were a German car maker and you were moving cars into London or the UK, and I'm going to get some of this verbiage wrong, but essentially the concept, you know, you could move about your way. Now, with Brexit, the walls and the permits and the passports, everything goes back up. The bureaucracy and the red tape goes back up. My point is this. If we do get to some level of secession in this country, logistics ain't going to get any easier.
Oh, no, it'll be just as complicated as it is to cross the Canadian or the Mexican border. And depending upon how the states are cooperating with each other, should some secede, there we go. I can speak today. yes, we may have a central state that we have to pass through that bottlenecks logistics. And that's the issue. I mean, look at what happened over there with Brexit, with the folks trying to bring their ham sandwiches across the border that they used to for years, and now they can't bring their own lunch to cross the international border because the UK is no longer part of the European Union, so you can't bring it in. It's kind of like when you hit the agricultural checkpoint in Florida or California, and you right. can't bring your citrus or your bananas
oh
in.
Oh my gosh. And I've it's funny you say that, because I was driving and I was going into California, and yeah, the hassle over just whether or not I had any fruit in the car.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
That's what you get when you don't have cooperative borders. And that's why we have a nationalized interstate commerce law. And could you imagine if we had to comply with 48 or 50 different state-level laws we used to cross the border for size and weight? And that's how we ended up with some very unique truck combinations, because Pennsylvania up until, I think, 78 or maybe 1980 did not allow double trailers. So they would hit the border, and they would take and pull the trailer all the way forward to the back of the cab on a set of doubles to make it a straight truck, and then pull the other trailer behind them when they were coming across Pennsylvania to get from Ohio to New Jersey or New York.
Yeah, so I just I was glad to talk about Brexit to be reminded that, yeah, you know what, secession may sound cool, but man, that would blow.
It's a logistical nightmare for us.
No.
And it's not a money making nightmare. It will be a money losing nightmare.
Yeah, it would be. That'll be rough.
Even as much as we joke about California falling off into the Pacific Ocean,
right.
A large part of our domestic transportation either originates or terminates in California. It would be devastating to our transportation network.
Andrew Circa is also saying, with the Ram 5500 and my 44-foot Sundowner two-car enclosed trailer, do I have to have the bed taken off the truck? Can I have a flatbed with a headache rack on there, CDL driver?
It's going to depend on his overall length and whether the truck is considered a truck or a tractor. With a pickup box on it, it is always going to be a truck, and so you're limited to 65-foot bumper to bumper. With a flatbed body on it, it is possible, depending upon how your title is branded and the truck is registered, to be considered a tractor. And again, this is one of these issues that is not federalized, because DOT doesn't really pay attention to the hot shots other than make sure you have authority and let us collect some fines from you. So we don't have a federal highway determination like we do for boat haulers or Stinger Steer auto transporters that thou shall only enforce this law. So it varies from state to state how they're going to treat that truck with or without the body on it.
And he also asks, what does truck trailer have to be registered as?
Truck trailer would be a truck with a regular truck registration towing a trailer, whereas if you want the unlimited length, you need to be a tractor trailer. So you can't have your title say TK for truck. It would say TT for tractor. And in most states, some states don't make a differentiation, but most states do. Again, this is a state level regulation, so I'd have to look up exactly what states they're talking about to give a more detailed answer.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. We got, man, we're already down to, we got less than 10 minutes left. And so if you have a DOT compliance question, you can put it in the live chat. If you miss the show live, you can comment below in the YouTube comments. I will tap Brian on the shoulder, make sure you get your question answered. Ty says, I appreciate the way Brian speaks. Listen carefully to his words. Good call, Ty. That is cool. And Hellcat Izzy in Missouri, state trooper. He said he don't care what the truck registers as. Long as you got the bed, you're a pickup.
If you have a pickup bed, then yes, you are a pickup truck. You cannot rebrand a pickup truck into a tractor. It has to be an altered vehicle. A utility body, a flatbed body, can be a tractor. And I don't care what that officer in Missouri thinks. We could take that to court and challenge it.
Oh, man. Good times. It's always a good time in Missouri. You hear that on a regular basis. It's pretty...
Man, Missouri hates anybody but a Stinger Steer auto transporter.
Oh, nothing like a good lobbyist, right? Get you.
Yes.
I mean, something happened legally. Something happened.
I guarantee you something did. I just don't know the history of it.
We're not going to know. We're never going to know. It didn't happen. Okay, here we go. Let's see. I want to mention this. I got this email this morning. Hey, Jay, I'm a new member here. Watch some videos. I need help when it comes to insurance. I'm up for renewal, and it's not good.
All right. I'm going to imagine he probably has a poor CSA, a poor safety score. Okay. And this is a mistake a lot of new folks make to this industry. They spend so much effort avoiding motor carrier enforcement, especially after they had their first one or two or three inspections go poorly, they decide to drive around the scale. Well, your safety score is a weighted average based on the violations, the severity of the number of violations, severity of violation, and how many clean inspections you have, your overall inspection number. So the only way to fix it when you get a couple bad inspections is to get a couple good clean inspections. So please don't avoid the DOT just for the sake of avoiding the DOT, although don't cross into the scale if you know you have something wrong either. So they can be your best friend when you're empty and you're all through and they decide to select you. Less things from the find wrong. That said, don't just accept that the officer was right when he cited you for something or wrote you up an inspection. Ask questions of somebody that knows better. See if you can challenge it. He may have made a procedural error. He may have made a factual error. That's what the data queue process is for. If you go to court and you get something adjudicated, they convict you of a different charge or they dismiss it altogether. Dismissals get removed from your record completely. A conviction of a different charge when it is DOT related gets put down to a severity weight of 1, so the points don't hurt as bad. And so really, you need to manage your safety score, whether it's just you yourself or you have drivers. Don't blow off these interactions with motor carrier enforcement as, they're out to pick on me, or, he didn't give me a fine, I'm good. No, you're not good. We need to address these. You need to have a plan to stop it from happening again. And when you're already in this boat, that you're in trouble. Then you need to create that corrective action plan to show your insurance carrier how, I learned my lesson last year, and here's what I've done differently. I've changed up my maintenance program. I now inspect the trucks sooner. I do them every 90 days instead of once a year for the annual inspection. I fired that driver. I hired a new guy, or I took some classes on this and this and this. And maybe, just maybe, if you have a good high-octane insurance agent, you know, someone like our buddy Lionel Yates, he might be able to talk the insurance company into reconsidering premium rate when they realize that you've put some effort into correcting your mistakes. We all make mistakes. Insurance companies want to see that you're learning from your mistakes, and then they can give you a second chance.
That's a great point. So assuming, let's say that's the case. Let's say there is a CSA issue and, you know, you're facing a renewal that's double or otherwise. What do you do? What can you do?
The first thing you want to do is look at what the violations you have on there are. See if any of them can be challenged, because even sometimes just removing one from a serious category or one that was an out of service that shouldn't have been out of service can vastly improve your score to the point where the insurance company will re-rate your policy lower. So first of all, challenge the data. I've had customers that have inspections on their record that isn't even their inspection. An officer, they're human, they make mistakes. They typed the wrong DOT number in when they were writing somebody up, and they transposed the digit, and now you have an inspection on your CSA score that belongs to another trucking company, because you can see that the vehicle you've never owned. Challenge it. Get it removed. That'll help. Get some good inspections. Call your local field office for your commercial vehicle enforcement, whatever agency does it in your state, and ask them. Right now with COVID, a lot of them are not, but ask them if they're doing any voluntary terminal inspections where you can volunteer your truck as a guinea pig for them to inspect. Normally they do it around training new officers. And of course you look it over before it goes there to make sure it's perfect, and you'll get the credit for the clean level one inspection on that. And you helped out the officers, and they'll remember that the next time. I do that quite often with some of my construction utility company customers. We'll bring their officers over to our garage once or twice a year so that they can do their number of inspections they need to do to stay certified. We get clean inspections on the client's vehicles. Everybody wins.
Wow. Ty says, Brian is correct. Run to the people that scare you the most. Really interesting. That's some interesting advice. And I do want to say, so the gentleman, he you know, I replied, put him in touch with Ty, put him in touch with Lionel, and he said, yeah, it's a big problem, about to hit everybody hard. There's a lot of damages claims taking place because of drivers, hotshot stinger drivers, tearing vehicles up. Do you think we have an industry systemic damage problem?
Yes, we do. We have a lack of training because the barrier to entry is too easy for this industry. And there's a lot of people out there rolling their eyes right now thinking this isn't easy to get into. It is easy to get into. And not to sound like the grumpy old guy, but when I got into this 30 years ago, we had to know somebody just to get that load of cars, that first load of cars. There was no central dispatch. There were not easy to find automotive logistics brokers. You had that relationship. Like Ty says, you beat on the door, you talked to the dealer, you hung out in the transporter lot at the auction, you set your table up and paid Pete's Northway Auto Exchange, which is now Mannheim Albany. You paid them $100 to sit in their lobby with your table and on sale day and get some customers. You beat on doors. It's too easy now to get to work and get into the business. And nobody wants to spend money on training because drivers don't stick around, but you're killing yourself. You're killing your insurance. You're killing the industry's insurance, because the industry doesn't look at anybody any different. If you're hauling cars, you're hauling cars, whether it's a one truck, a one car trailer behind your pickup truck, or a 9, 10, 11 car stinger. And we're all lumped together. So, and it's not, I am not attacking the wedges either, because there's just many guys with high mounts and stingers that are struggling to get drivers. And so they put anybody with a pulse in their truck and hope that they don't do too much damage. And so we are our own worst enemy, because we have relaxed our hiring standards, because there really is not that many people that want to be truck drivers anymore. So it is very difficult to recruit people into our industry when they can go make $80,000 a year driving on a dedicated account, dropping and hooking trailers at a grocery store or at a home improvement warehouse. They don't want to walk 5 or 6 miles a day, digging cars out of the snow, pulling cars out of auctions, and playing a giant game of Tetris every day.
Oh, man. You know, it's really interesting. You said a lot. It was really great stuff. And it, you know, I know there's a thirst and a need for some people to, you know, find something else to do, get into auto transport, trucking, logistics, dispatcher, broker, etc. And I appreciate you trying to help me and Auto Transport Intel educate. If folks are gonna get in, we may as well try to educate folks, right?
Absolutely. I'm
And
not saying don't do it. I'm
right.
saying learn how to do it the right way to save yourself the headaches and do the industry a favor as you're doing that. If we all just took the time to do it right instead of getting all pissed off, excuse the language, all upset when the Facebook police come out and tell us something's wrong with our post. Maybe we need to be a little less critical of other people, but maybe we need to also open our eyes and our ears and listen when someone with 20 or 30 years experience is telling you. I watched an argument on Facebook the other day about backing Ford Mustangs onto a trailer and how the guy's done it his entire life. No big deal. Ford Motor Company in their transport procedure manual says, do not back a manual transmission equipped Mustang on the trailer. Period. Doesn't care why, it's just period. Don't do it. Book says no. So again, when somebody with experience tells you, hey, when you're hauling them new, you can't do that. For some reason, the manufacturer says no, don't start yelling at them. Listen to them. Find out where they're coming from. Maybe they are full of it, but maybe they're trying to save you from a damage claim. Load a convertible backwards over your hood and watch a window blow out. Or I loaded a Porsche with a removable roof once, and I lost a roof panel because I forgot to check that it was latched. These are things we can learn from experience from each other.
Well, and I am proud to say I feel like there is a thawing of the ice. We're seeing more requests for discussion rather than just closed doors and you're not allowed stuff. I also feel like a lot of the, you know, get rich clickbait gets off sometimes replaced by, you know, I screwed up. I'm going out of business. Here's what I did wrong. If in general we can just stop telling everybody you're not allowed to learn and you're going to get rich no matter what you do, if we can decrease that kind of talk, start opening the doors, let's communicate. Maybe we're headed in the right direction. And so, Brian, my hat's off to you. Thank you for helping me do that now on Wednesdays at noon. It's really awesome.
That's what I'm here for. It helps the industry as a whole, and selfishly, it helps my customers when more people know what is right and wrong so that they can not get involved with what is wrong right from the start. So it really, I'm a teacher at heart. I like to teach you the right way to do things. What you do with that knowledge later is your business. I can't force you to do anything, but I like to teach people the right way to do things, let them make their own decisions. And really, this is a business. It is a career. Treat it as such while you're doing it, and it will treat you nice. I made a very comfortable living in the car haul and the towing industry for the last 3 decades.
Well, we appreciate you. You're a great teacher. Also, the link to your business is in the live chat. It's fleetcompliancesolutions.net. You can also go to yourdotguy.com because Brian Riker is your DOT guy. And that's it, man. 30 minutes is up, and we're gonna close the show out. I want to thank everybody in the live chat for tuning in, participating, asking questions. Again, if you miss the show live, go ahead and put it in the YouTube comments below. I'll tap Brian on the shoulder. And hey, don't forget, you can check out the video descriptions. There's time codes in the video descriptions. After about 24 hours, I get that done, and you can jump right to the section you need. So, guys, thank you so much. Happy Wednesday, and we'll see you soon. Stay safe, and please do join us tomorrow on Dispatching Live, where we give load board search advice as best as we can. See you guys. Take care.